You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
We are hovering around full employment. That's the phrase economists and the journalists who love them use. Hovering around full employment. But the first time I encountered that phrase as a weird kid reading the business section of the newspaper, I read it as hoovering around full employment, like the economy was this enormous vacuum cleaner sucking up the jobless. Anyway, Trump has probably already claimed credit for all the hoovering the job market is doing right now. Yeah, the economy is creating jobs and has been since 2010. Not great paying jobs, no new jobs in coal mines, more and more jobs without healthcare, thanks to Trump and the Republicans in Congress. But this is still Obama's jobs recovery. And right now, Trump is boasting and coasting, which is what Republicans do when they take over from a Democrat who has repaired the damage done to the economy and the culture by a previous Republican administration. We will see what happens this year with Trump's obscene new tax scheme going into effect. But there is at least one newly unemployed person out there who could use a job in 2018. Mateo Rueda is an art teacher, or was an art teacher, at Lincoln Elementary in Hiram, Utah. In early December, he sent his students to the school's very own library to look through boxes of postcards of famous artworks that were a part of the school's own collection. This was off the school's own shelves stuff, not art postcards Rueda brought in from home. And I hope you're sitting down. In those collection, hundreds of postcards of famous works of European and world art, there were a few naked ladies. When Rueda realized there was nudity in the collection of postcards in the school's own library, he yanked the postcards with nudes, apologized to his students, and informed them that artists have, from time to time, painted pictures of naked ladies and dudes. These being fifth and sixth graders, and this being Utah, you can probably guess what happens next. Parents found out, and some, not all, but some did what any unreasonable person would do in a case like this. They called the police on the art teacher who allowed his students to look at art postcards sitting on the shelf in the school's own library. The police opened an investigation, took the collection of postcards into evidence, seized them, interviewed the school's principal and some upset parents, and then the school did what any unreasonable school would do and fired Rueda for letting his students look at art postcards that were in the library at Lincoln Elementary, where they could be viewed, at least in theory, by students at Lincoln Elementary. I kept checking the dates on the stories I was reading about Mateo Rueda's firing. I couldn't believe parents today, now, with their kids carrying smartphones in their pockets, yes, even in small towns in Utah, could get upset about a Modigliani nude. And they seem to be upset that Rueda told their kids that there were more naked ladies in art museums out there everywhere. Gee, now that our kids know that there are naked ladies in art museums, they might tear themselves away from Pornhub and XTube long enough to visit the Met's website and pick through its collection looking for news. They might even, once they get the hell out of Hiram, Utah, visit an art museum. Heavenly Father forbid. In fairness, some Lincoln Elementary parents have protested the firing of their school's art teacher. But as with sex ed, so with art postcards, these sexphobic, sex-panicked parents are angrier and louder, and school boards and administrators are more afraid of the angry shouters than they are of the cooler, calmer, saner parents and people out there everywhere. As a general rule, there isn't really anything about our country that couldn't be improved by saner people making a concerted effort to be louder and scarier than the sexphobes and the sexists and the haters and the racists and the climate change denialists and on and on. Welcome to 2018. Happy New Year, sane people. We got loud in 2017, and we are going to have to be even louder in 2018. Mateo Rueda is going to appeal his dismissal and fight to get his job back. No word yet on whether the Cache County Sheriff's Office is going to return the seized art postcards to the school library at Lincoln Elementary. All right, coming up on the micro-free edition of the Savage Lovecast, we've got tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and joining me on the Magnum Subscription Edition, which you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com, a hot black guy from the internet to talk about how hot black guys on the internet are treated by other guys on the internet. That's on the Magnum. This episode of the Lovecast is brought to you by Zeal, the best way to find top local licensed and pre-screened massage therapists to come to your home anytime. Go to zeal.com and get $25 off your first massage by using the promo code SAVAGE at checkout. Today's episode is brought to you by Stamps.com. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your fingertips. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail using your own computer and printer. And right now you can enjoy the Stamps service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in my code, SAVAGE. That's Stamps.com, click the mic, enter SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan. I'm a late 30s married female and an attorney. I'm an attorney in a fairly small field, and because it's small, relationships are fairly important to getting things done. It's also predominantly male and still somewhat stuck in the old boys club mentality. So I quite frequently get comments about my outfit, or more so how I look in it and what maybe I should be doing later. And I do the female socialized response of giggle, tee-hee, oh, thank you, and maybe a little flirty response back. I've come to realize that certainly that is not a good way to do this and educate these men that this is inappropriate. I've certainly never felt unsafe, and a small part of me does enjoy it, but I still got it. But I am concerned that maybe other people may not know me as well and may not realize I am a good attorney. Like, I think that these men who make these comments, certainly I have proven to myself to them as an attorney. But other people may overhear who don't know me and may even be potential clients. So aside from being inappropriate, I'm also concerned that it is affecting my relationships with others. So I'm trying to come up with a better way to respond. Obviously, there's no HR I can go to. I don't work directly in a company with these men. And a lot of them have their own firms, so it's not even like I could go to their boss if that was an option. So I'm trying to come up with a way to respond that will educate them that this is inappropriate while also not making me the grumpy lady that can't hang with the boys. You know, I also feel that because some guy can't not make a joke, I should not have to leave my pearls at home, my pearl necklace. So just some advice on maybe better ways to respond to this.
Deflecting this shit can be exhausting. It's also degrading. You shouldn't have to paste a smile on your face when someone is making a joke, an inappropriate, demeaning, degrading joke about your pearl necklace. But full confrontation, really going at these guys, is potentially career suicide, and not for them, for you. It's this catch-22 that a lot of women find themselves in who are vulnerable. You don't want to lose clients, lose business. You don't want to get a reputation as somebody who can't be worked with. You don't want to open yourself up to being Mia Sorvino'd by the Harvey Weinsteins of your world. So what do you do in an instance like this? You should be able to angrily confront some asshole who makes a joke about your pearl necklace or some other inappropriate, unprofessional remark. But you have to weigh that against your income, your future. And you shouldn't have to, and that sucks, and I'm sorry. But that's what you're asking me for. How do you educate these assholes without coming across like the grumpy lady who can't hang with the boys? I think there's another option on the table besides deflection and besides direct and angry and righteous and you ought to be able to, confrontation. And that's kind of a lateral pass, a gesture toward other people who might have a problem with this. You could say to these guys, have you read the news? Have you opened a newspaper in print like an old fucking fart like you are? Have you opened a website? Have you turned on a television in the last few months? Are you familiar with the work of Harvey Weinstein, Kevin Spacey, Garrison Keillor, and on and on and on? And the fact that none of these men are working anymore because they were doing shit like you're doing right now. And you can say to them, hey, I can take it. That's ha ha ha, my pearl necklace. But guys, you got to know, if you say this to the wrong person, you are potentially committing career suicide. You said it to me. I wasn't the wrong person. Next time you might draw the short straw. Next time you might draw the HR complaint. Next time you might draw the being called to the bar. Potentially losing your license in this hashtag Me Too era. So hashtag knock this shit off, not for my sake, not in deference to my delicate sensibilities, but for your own sake. Guys, the world has changed around you. Dinosaurs. And you got to change with it. Or the person you're going to hurt now, it isn't the women that you work with and feel compelled to demean and degrade to make yourselves feel better about being dudes or less threatened by powerful women. The person you're going to hurt is you. The career you're going to end is yours. Open a fucking newspaper. Ha, 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 ha. Pearl necklace.
Hey, Dan. I'm a 29-year-old straight male living in the East Coast. I am calling with a question about what to tell somebody that I'm dating. So I have been dating this person for only like 2 weeks, and we spent about 4 days pretty much seeing each other for like basically nonstop. And eventually things got pretty intimate on the third or fourth day. And, you know, we had sex. It was great and it was fun, but like there's a something about her that was just really troubling to me, and I couldn't figure it out until like I realized really recently that she reminded me exactly of my ex-girlfriend. And I have a lot of past trauma with my ex-girlfriend that I'm still clearly dealing with. And I sort of just the last week have been kind of ignoring her on some level. I've been texting her a little bit, but I just have not been as intimate with her, not been talking to her as much. And so I'm wondering, like, I know that the reason is because she reminds me so much of my ex-girlfriend, and I didn't really realize it until we had sex. And so I'm trying to figure out, do I like tell her this? Do I tell her that, you know, the reason I don't really want to see you anymore, or the reason that I feel like this is not going to work is because you remind me so much of my ex-girlfriend? Or if I should just leave it to myself and just tell her that, you know, like, things aren't working out, things don't feel right. Or do I, like, continue trying to see her and see if that feeling goes away? You know, like, I like her, but it would be really difficult to continue seeing her if she reminds me so much of my ex, who was really terrible to me.
Break things off cleanly. Don't just ghost on this woman. And use the off-the-shelf excuses. It's not you, it's me. And literally, in your case, that's true. It is you. She hasn't done anything wrong except bearing a vague similarity to your ex, the ex that you had a very unpleasant time with, the ex who left you kind of traumatized. So it is literally you, not her. She can't help that she's similar in some ways to your ex. In fact, it's probably your fault that you're seeing someone, again, who is similar in some ways to your ex. Now, the ways in which she's similar to your ex, those could be positive traits. Something about your ex attracted you to her. She also had qualities or issues or damage or drama that repulsed you and that left you kind of traumatized in the wake of that relationship. It's possible that the girl you've been seeing now shares some of the positive traits, some of the things you liked about your ex, and you may be rounding her up to completely your ex, including all the garbage and shit. So think about that for a second, whether you're doing that or not. Because every woman you're ever going to date, because you're attracted to certain types and certain emotional dynamics or components, there's always going to be certain similarities. At the very least, biped, vertebrate, hominid, right? There's always going to be some baseline similarities from girl to girl to girl that you date. And if every time you date a girl, you run the program in your head, you identify the ways in which she's similar to your shitty toxic ex in your past, then you have to dump them because, yeah, you're setting yourself up for a lot of romantic failure and you're setting a lot of women up for heartbreak. So think about that before you dump this woman. But if the traits she shares with your ex are the negative things, the traumatizing things, things you don't want in a partner ever again, yeah, just break it off. Don't ghost and don't tell her, hey, that was really fun. Really enjoyed putting my dick in you. You remind me of my ex though, so I'm out. Because what's she supposed to do with that? Except be pained by it and feel as if the universe took a dump on her. So yeah, don't say that. You eat it. You say the cliche. Grab the cliche off the shelf. Not you. It's me. It's true in this case. And everybody knows or should know what to do when they hear it's not you, it's me. It's just not happening for them for whatever reason. And there's not going to be an explanation. And we don't get explanations and closure is something we do for ourselves, not something that other people have to provide for us or can provide for us. She's a big girl. She's been dumped before. She'll get dumped again, as will you. So dump her. Don't ghost her. Don't pull the Band-Aid off slowly. Don't text with her just a little bit, just enough to fill her with false hopes. When you know this isn't happening, Just fucking ova up and end it. Oh my God, look at you. You are so tense. It's 2018. Who is intense right now? You, like me, we all need a massage. Luckily, this episode of the Savage Lovecast is sponsored by Zeal, and you can have the massage you need right there, right in your home. They will come to you. You pick the time, you pick the location, have your next massage on demand at home and as soon as possible. Just go to Zeal.com or on Zeal's iPhone or Android app, that's Zeal, spelled Z-E-E-L.com, and select from top local licensed and pre-screened massage therapists. Choose your favorite technique, gender preference, time, and location for your massage. 7 days a week, 365 days a year, a Zeal massage therapist can be at your door in as little as an hour. Privacy, convenience, quality, and comfort, that's what you get with your massage on demand with Zeal. They'll send one of their 9,000 licensed massage therapists with a massage table, music, and everything you need to turn your living room into a spa and give you a 5-star massage. Scheduling, booking, and payment is fast and easy. Even the tip is included. No money changes hands. Don't wait all week for a massage appointment at a spa when Zeal can come to you right away. To help you get started, our listeners can get $25 off their first massage by using the promo code SAVAGE at checkout. And even better, sign up for Zeal's massage membership and get 20% off your first massages plus a free massage table and sheet set. That's a $380 value, yours free. There's no initiation fee to join and get a membership, just a great additional savings on top of the $25 discount you're going to get when you use the promo code SAVAGE. So go to Zeal, spelled Z-E-E-L.com, or use the Zeal iPhone or Android app, and then make sure to click Add Promo Code at checkout to use my code SAVAGE and get $25 off your first in-home on-demand massage.
Hey, Dan, and the Tech Savvy at-risk youth. I'm a queer woman from Southern Connecticut, and I'm calling with a problem I've been having about dudes on dating apps. I usually date and fuck queer women and trans folks, but every now and then I like to fuck a cis dude. Recently, when I've been trying to talk to them, I've run into this problem where I propose a date so we can get to know each other in person, and they redirect my question. They either ignore my question or start sexting me, tell me we should meet up right now, even though I'm usually at work or busy. I've given a couple of these guys the benefit of the doubt and actually gotten them out and fucked. But even after that, they're relentless with their text messages, especially late at night or when they want to sext. But they're so hesitant to set a time. It's extremely frustrating. And I really wouldn't mind it so much. I would just tell them to fuck off. But these are the same guys that won't stop texting me. I don't understand this behavior. I've been really clear about my wants and needs are, but they don't seem to understand them. What is going on here? Is it me? Is it a dude thing? I don't get it.
It's not you. It's them. There are guys out there, lots of guys out there, perhaps even the majority of guys out there, who have this dirty thought, porn loop, fantasy world constantly running in their heads, constantly humming away, sometimes on the back burner, sometimes it's the B plot, sometimes it becomes the A plot, but it's constantly... Guys are like this, and lots of women are like this too. You move through the world thinking dirty thoughts. You have this internal porny monologue, and some guys will meet people online and not really feel like they're people because they're just pixels and digits and text messages, and they will plug that pixelated person, those pixels, into their porny internal monologue. And just start to toy with and play with them and fantasize about them, not as another living, breathing human being that they're ever going to meet. Some guys don't ever want to meet that person. They want that person to exist as pure internal porny monologue fantasy. And they'll start with the dirty texts and the sexting and the we should and we will and I want to, but they won't set up a time to actually meet because you're this pornified, fantastical abstraction, this fantasy figure. And you've been plugged into the porny internal monologue. And when that happens, you have the option of blocking these assholes, blocking their numbers if you don't want to play that role. Now, some people out there really enjoy that. Some people have long-term, porny, shared, mutual internal monologue relationships with people that they've met via Instagram or on Twitter or via dating apps where they're never going to meet. They're just going to delight each other by poking each other a little bit during the day, by sending a dirty little message, by cranking them up and getting cranked up in return. And that is the extent of the relationship. And that's not necessarily a terrible thing to share with someone from afar. It's one of the great pleasures that these technologies have brought into our lives or brought into some of our lives. But it has to be mutual, mutually enjoyable, mutually pleasurable for it to continue. You don't have to subject yourself to this. You can block these guys. It's interesting that you've run a few of these guys to ground and actually met up with them. Has me thinking that on some level, perhaps you enjoy being plugged into these guys' internal porny monologues. And that's not a terrible thing. But you want IRL, as the kids said until they heard me saying it, at which point they promptly stopped saying it. You want in real life action. And you should call them on it. And that can be a problem for some guys because they get online, they get on dating apps, they meet people via Instagram or some other social media platform, and they construct a sort of more masculine, more sexual, more aggressive, more competent persona. And they know that they can't live up to that person. They know they can't live up to the person that their sexts and their text messages might lead the recipient of their sexts and text messages to believe that they are. So they can never meet up because they're going to be a disappointment. And they don't want to be a disappointment. They'd rather continue to be this internal monologue porny fantasy figure for you and for themselves. So some guys oversell. And they can't close the deal because they know they can't bring the goods. And you're never going to meet those guys. And there's usually a point where you realize that's what's going on. And at that point, if you're interested in real life hooking up with occasional cis dude, block that guy because he's never going to come through. But if you want to go to the extra effort of reeling in the guy where it hasn't gone that far yet, it almost sounds like I'm describing that fictitional process of being moved into the friend zone. But perhaps in this case, it's real. You're being moved into the fantasy abstraction zone. If you feel yourself being moved toward the fantasy abstraction zone, you can demand an in-real-life meeting. You can say, I'm not interested in endless sexting and chatting. I want to meet. I want face-to-face. I want face-to-crotch. I want crotch-to-crotch. That's what I'm here for. That's what I'm interested in. If that's never going to happen, see you, bye. You can call the question. Perhaps then you'll land the dude. But if it goes on and on and on and on, you're never going to meet that dude because that dude knows that the image that he's created in your head of him is a fiction, and he'd rather not meet than meet and disappoint.
Hi, Dan. I love the podcast. I'm a 22-year-old trans man, and I have a question for you. I'm very deeply and intrinsically kinky as a dominant top, and for a variety of reasons, including just shyness, I've never mentioned this to my past vanilla partners. And when it's been time for me to orgasm, I've mentally just floated away to a fantasy where I'm doing the things I wanted to do instead in order to come. Every time, I was never present in the moment with them. I also never really consciously realized I was doing this or really thought about it beyond, okay, time to come. I transitioned 2 years ago, and I've been dating my girlfriend for 4 months so far, though we were extremely close friends for a year or so before then. She's my first new partner since transitioning, and she is the epitome of GGG. We are extraordinarily sexually compatible. I'm getting to do all the things I've ever fantasized about to her, and she loves it. I feel connected and involved with her in ways I never have before. But when it's time for me to come, I still do the same thing. And that's what made me realize I was doing it, because I started to separate from myself to come and got irritated with myself because I like her so much and I wanted to be there with her, even if that meant not coming. My girlfriend and I have talked about this, and she thinks it's actually kind of hot, like I'm using her to get off while being detached and not paying attention to her. She specifically asked me to tell you that she's open to doing anything you suggest. Like I said, she's really GGG. Personally, it bothers me a bit that I can't be present with her. I'd rather it be a personal choice that I can choose to do or not. But I also don't care too much about coming during sex. It isn't a requirement for me. It may be a trans thing. I don't fantasize about things like fucking her of a dick I don't have or anything. I literally just think about things we already do, but I need to feel separated from myself in order to come. My first sexual partner and ex-girlfriend also violently raped me when I was 15, and I don't remember if I needed the separation to come before then. I may have just taught myself into it from my past vanilla experiences. They've all been men, and I'm not incredibly into men. So do I have a weird trans version of death grip syndrome? Do you have any suggestions for how to break me of this habit? I'd really like to be able to be present and in the moment with her.
Your problem's interesting, but I'm really obsessed with the word you accidentally coined there when you said that you and your new girlfriend, and congratulations on your new relationship, you described yourselves as compatible. You meant compatible, of course, with a P, but you said compatible with a B. And that's kind of genius. I'm in love with this word. I just want to sit with this word because it kind of describes my relationship, my husband. Our friends call us the Bickering Bickersons. We love each other loudly. We fight and we go at each other every once in a while, but it's all very loving and we both enjoy it. It obviously works and works for us. We're compatible. It's a compatible relationship and a very compatible relationship with my husband. We are compatible, the two of us. Anyway, I love that word. I love a neologism and I love it when it happens organically, like it just did in your call. So thank you. Also, congratulations on your transition. I think perhaps this disassociation might have something to do with gender dysphoria. That's an easy thing to pin it to or to see an angle on, that before you transitioned, you were in a way separated from yourself. And perhaps that spilled out into your erotics and erotic imagination. But I think the likelier explanation, and let's Occam's razor the shit out of this, is that for a great deal of time, you were having sex, you were having partnered sex. It wasn't the sex that you wanted to have. It wasn't the kind of sex you wanted to have. It wasn't with the people that you wanted to be with. So in order to climax, you had to throw yourself in the end into the kind of sex and the kind of people that you wanted to be having it with in order to climax. So you had to disassociate. You had to go to a private, masturbatory, fantasy place, and that carved a very deep groove, perhaps a mental death grip syndrome. You carved a very deep groove into your erotic response, into your orgasmic routine, and this is what brought you to the point of orgasmic inevitability. This was reliable, and so you kept going back to it in the way that somebody with death grip syndrome reliably chokes the shit out of their dick in order to come and carves a deep groove, and then they're unable to climax without that particular sensation, a sensation that a vagina or a mouth or an anus can't provide. Only a gripped fist can provide, and a roughly gripped fist can provide. So how do you break yourself of this habit? Well, not in the same way, not in the exact same way that someone with death grip syndrome breaks himself of that habit, which is just stop it. If you don't come, you don't come. And you wait 6 months, wait a year, and you have sex and you enjoy the sex. And if you don't get there, you don't, in the last minute, revert to the death grip that always worked for you, because your dick's just going to wait you out every time and you're not going to break yourself of it. But in your case, I think you continue to go there. I think you continue to do what you're doing, but you bring your GGG girlfriend along into your fantasies. Dirty talk. You guys are doing whatever you're doing. She's GGG. You're able to have the crazy kinky sex that you've always wanted to have and with the person you've always wanted to have it. Your junk is waiting. And the chunk of your brain that manages your junk and keeps track of the orgasmic plateaus and sends out the warning signals when you reach the point of orgasmic inevitability. As that's all happening, there is a script running in your head. There is a monologue. There is the fantasy scenario that you were spinning out. And it is verbal, perhaps, in your head. It's not just a cascade of images. At this point, with you having fantasized about these things over and over again, it's a script. Open your mouth, use your words, say these things, share that fantasy in that moment with your partner, with your girlfriend, and let it exist side by side with whatever else you two are doing at that moment. And that's totally possible. You can be having a crazy kinky sex connection or a crazy vanilla sex connection, and the physical sensations of that and the emotional sensations of that can exist side by side with you, and you can open your mouth and share that monologue, share that fantasy with your girlfriend as you're doing everything else that you're doing. Obviously, you can do these things at the same time, physically do what you're doing and also have this fantasy script running in your head, and bring her in and let her help you build on it, because it's a dialogue then and not just you retreating into your fantasy and you pulling out of the room or disassociating from her. You're pulling her into your fantasy with you. And these things, what you guys are doing and everything you've done up to this moment, and then this fantasy spinning out, they can happen at the same time, happen together. And so you're not leaving your girlfriend and going someplace else. You're taking your girlfriend's hand and she's joining you in that other place while you still also both together remain in the other place, the physical place where you are connected. And then the fantasy place where you are also connected, but looking forward to the things you're going to do next time. And you may find that you're doing X with your girlfriend and you spin out fantasy scenario Y. And next time you guys get together or a little ways down the road, you're doing fantasy scenario Y, but you're spinning out fantasy scenario Z. And this is how your erotic imagination, your erotic script plays out. It's how it works for you. Bring her into it. Entirely possible. Bring her in. She wants in. It's a great sign that she doesn't feel insecure by the fact that you go there when you're with her and you need to go there. So she's not shaming you. It's not like you have to bring her in or she's going to be mad or jealous or upset. You get to bring her in. You have a partner who supports the way your erotic imagination, your erotic script plays. Let her play with you. Let her build on it. Let her add to it. Let her be present in it. This is what we like to call a non-problem problem. There really isn't a problem here. You just need to shift a little bit. You just need to get out of your own way. And it's all going to be good. It's all going to be solved. We're going to do a whole show on non-problem problems. And we've been saving the non-problem problem calls. You're slipped through the non-problem problem call filter. So everybody gets to look forward to the non-problem problem show. But you and your girlfriend, while everyone else looks forward to the non-problem problem show, you get to enjoy what's working. And it sounds like everything is working in your highly compatible relationship. And from one person in a highly compatible relationship to another, I say congratulations on finally doing what you want to do, finally being who you actually are with the person you want to do and be those things with. Congratulations. Have fun. Here's a New Year's resolution you can actually keep. Add stamps.com to your business and save a ton of time and money this year. Stamps.com brings all the amazing services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your computer. Simply create your Stamps.com account online in minutes, print official U.S. postage for any letter or package, any class of mail, and let the mailman pick it up. No leaving the office, no leaving your house if you have a home business, no more hassle. Stamps.com even sends you a digital scale that automatically calculates exact postage. And they have postage discounts you cannot get at the post office. Plus, it's a fraction of the cost of those new super expensive postage meters. And right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer that includes a four-week trial, plus postage and a digital scale. Ready for a happier new year? Go to Stamps.com. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Savage. That's Stamps.com. Enter Savage at the top of the homepage.
Hey, Dan, this is Charlie from North Carolina. Me and my wife decided to open our marriage. She is bisexual, and she never explored it until recently, and it's always been a part of her, and I've been trying to support her and think it's a good thing. I don't feel like she's cheating on me or anything like that. I think it's a part of her. She's suppressed for 35 years, and I'm encouraging her to do it. I have chose not to open up the marriage from my end because I don't feel like I need to, but I guess my question is trying to stay supportive, trying to make myself feel secure in all of it. I don't feel like she's cheating. I don't feel like she's trying to hurt me. I get this is who she is, and I'm trying to support her, and I just don't know how to get my feelings right and my head right sometimes during times of doubt to keep that support going, because I want this for her, and I feel like she's suppressed this for years, and it hurts me that she's lived like that, and I want her to live their life to the fullest.
You know, a lot of people out there listening are probably like, what the fuck with this guy? He's opening up the marriage, but only for the wife. You're not opening it up for yourself. She's going to have sex with other people. You're not going to have sex with other people. Is that correct?
Correct. And it's opening up to women for her.
Right. Some people, when they, you know, they open the relationship for the partner, they feel sort of obligated to go have sex with other people themselves, whether or not they really want to, because it's only fair. And so they run out and have sex that leaves them feeling icky or dispirited because they didn't really want to do it. They were fine with their partner doing it, but they feel somehow as if they're being badly used or that they would be embarrassed if other people knew that their partner was having sex with other people, but they were not. And it's good that you are able to get to this point where you're like, you know what, I don't have to, even though she's going to, and I'm going to let her. And this is ethical non-monogamy, but it doesn't have to be mutual non-monogamy. Because it's not what you want. And that's what's important here. That's what people need to focus on. Not who's getting how much ice cream, but who wants ice cream. And if one person wants ice cream, the other person doesn't, you don't shove ice cream down the throat of the person who doesn't want fucking ice cream. She needs to and wants to have sex with other people. You don't want to. And so you're not going to. She's going to. And it's ethical non-monogamy. And I think that's a good place to start. What I'm calling you about, though, is it sounds like you think it's all on you to make this work.
Yeah, it does to an extent.
Okay, you say, how do I get my feelings right with this?
Right.
That's the expression you used a couple of times. How do I get right with this? How do I get my feelings right with this? So what are the feelings that you're talking about that don't feel right? Are you struggling with feelings of jealousy, with insecurity?
I guess it would be insecurity, definitely more than jealousy. Like, I get this is a part of her, and I'm trying to give that to her and letting her explore that. But I want to feel, I guess, safe enough to do it where I don't feel like I'm inadequate in all of it, and just trying to honor what she's feeling and letting her experience and live life to the fullest.
You know, one of the ways to solve the, you know, I don't want to feel inadequate dilemma in our lives is to embrace that we are all of us inadequate. That no one person is all things sexually to another person, that there are always inadequacies. And there are, you know, the prices of admission that people pay to be with us and we pay to be with them. You don't get everything you want in a partner. No one does. And even if you're in an open relationship and you can sleep with 8 million people or 8 billion people, you're still not going to get everything you ever wanted in a partner or from sex. Because it's just, it doesn't work that way. Because our fantasies, our imaginations have no limits. And, you know, anything is possible in our fantasies and anything is possible in our erotic imaginations, and not everything is possible with human beings. So those feelings of inadequacy, just embrace them, inhabit them. Yeah, I can't be everything for her. There must be parts of her. There must be things that you don't get. There must be ways in which she is inadequate.
Right.
So the advice there is just like, you know, people write to me, oh, he's looking at porn. I, you know, my girlfriend is staring at the barista. It makes me feel like I'm not enough. It's like, you know, you're not. But you're close enough to enough that they chose you and they're with you. And it's wonderful when one person needs something very specific that their partner can't bring to the table, rather than let that need fester and rather than let that become a wedge that gets driven into the relationship and could ultimately destroy it, to give that person permission to go get that need met elsewhere can make the couple bond stronger, because then you're not the reason that this can't happen for that person. You're the reason this is happening for that person. And nothing about being with you prevents them from also having this other thing that they want and need. And it can make a relationship stronger because your partner comes home feeling grateful. She, you know, hopefully, ideally, she'll look at you and think, I love him even more now because I get to have him. I get to have everything that we are and our history. And I get to have the dick. And I also get to have women and to be, you know, to not just to be bisexual, because you can be bisexual in a monogamous relationship with an opposite partner, but to act on it. So it's a way of turning your inadequacy into something that strengthens your bond rather than tears at it. Like, I can't be this for you. Go get it. And then come home to me. And if she comes home in the right frame of mind, she should come home feeling grateful to you. That said, you're going to have jealousies. You're going to have insecurities. And it's on her, not on you, to hold your hand and work through that with you. You know, people say to people in open relationships, oh my God, what about jealousy? Well, jealousy is something that people in closed relationships also struggle with. But the difference in an open relationship is how you process it together, is how you prove to each other that the open relationship is working and it's right for you. It's a good choice for you guys. It's not that, oh, I experienced jealousy, therefore we can't be in an open relationship. It's, oh, I'm feeling insecure. I'm feeling jealous. I need you to pay some attention to me. I need for you to talk with me about what's going on. I need reassurance right now. And then your partner that you've given this freedom to, she sits with you and she speaks with you and she offers you reassurance, and you guys emphasize to each other again that you're the couple, that this is the primary relationship, that you are each other's top priority. And so there's nothing about you experiencing jealousy that she should be angry about, unless your jealousy is weaponized, unless your jealousy is abusive. It's about control. If it's about genuine jealousy, genuinely experienced, not weaponized to ruin her or destroy her life or control her actions in a shitty way, then it's not a problem. So the reason I called you back is I just got the sense that in your discussions with the wife, it's all on you to make this work. And it's not all on you. It's also on her. If this is what she wants, this freedom to be with others while you are exclusive with her, because you don't have a desire to be with others yourself, that she needs to hit certain marks to demonstrate to you that she can be trusted with this freedom and that she respects you and loves you more for your having granted it to her, and that she's going to go the extra mile to prove to you that you're still her top priority, that this relationship, her marriage, is still her top priority, even as she's getting some girl-on-girl sex that she's always wanted, even if she crushes out on somebody that she's getting with, that you're still number one. And you have a right to expect that from her. Okay?
Yeah, man. Yeah, thank you. I mean, I guess I never really thought of it from the angles that you just said. And I already feel a lot better just hearing what you're saying. It makes perfect sense.
So regular check-ins, that's something you need to schedule. Regular check-ins about it. You know, if she's going to go out on a date with somebody, she needs to lavish some like time and attention and care on you before and after.
Right. So yeah, no, we have discussed that, and it's gone to, I think, like a once a week thing to check in. Mm-hmm. And just, I think there's a lot of me getting in. I was overthinking a lot of it, thinking stress is all on me and not taking a step, like you said, and thinking about us. And I've tried to take a step back and think through things more and dial it down and just communicate more. But what you said is it's true. I was putting it all on me, and I wasn't really thinking how it's on her too, and pretty much us to make it work. So it makes perfect sense.
You've given her a real gift, and you've given her, you've invested her with this freedom that she needs, and she needs to earn it, and not just earn it the first time. She needs to prove to you, she needs to demonstrate to you as a regular sort of dynamic in your relationship that she honors this and treasures it, this freedom, and honors and treasures you for having granted it to her. And it's going to make sure that you always feel honored and treasured for granting her this freedom.
Excellent. Thank you. Yeah.
Good luck to you both.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Hi, Dan. I just listened to your episode where you discussed sex robots with Luke Burbank. I agreed with everything that you said, that some people have no options and that's why they use them. But to me, as a woman, the reason that they're creepy is because they are like the personification of rape culture. It's the body of a woman who can't say no to them and who the men can just use like an object but feels like a real woman. And I mean, I think like, thank God, at least they're not like doing the things that they're probably doing to these robots to actual women. But the idea that they want a robot who can't reject them like a woman can is just like fucked up. It's rapey and it's fucked up.
This is in response to episode 583, the woman asking about fertility calendars and birth control. I was a lot like you for many, many years. Birth control made me super moody, weight gain. I'd watch myself be crazy, and I overall just hated it. I have now been using a fertility calendar for about 10 years now, and it's awesome. I can plan vacations around my period. It's so regular. And I can just use this app to look in advance at when I'm going to be on my period and cycling. And it's amazing. I will say it took about 6 months for things to even out when I got off birth control. But now I can set my watch to my cycle. I highly, highly recommend it. The other thing, though, is that not everyone is regular, so it may or may not work with you. However, my fiance and I now are using it to get pregnant because it tells us when and I will exactly be the most receptive to his sperm. So good luck with that. Yeah.
Hi, Dan. This is a comment regarding the woman whose husband called because she wants to have a gay best friend, or a GBS, as millennials are now calling it. As a straight woman who has a lot of gay male friends, friendships I've made organically throughout the years of my life, my best advice to her would be to join gay causes, become an active ally in the LGBT community. I met my best friend when we were fighting against Prop 8 in California. So, you know, join LGBT-related causes and friendships will forge organically. And also, you can join the theater. Yeah, you can go ahead and just join LGBT causes and she can become a proactive ally and make some really great friends in the process without accessorizing them. Gay friends are not accessories. You don't need a token friend. You can let your friendships forge naturally by just being a really good ally.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. Follow me on Twitter at Fake Dan Savage. Follow Marquise on Twitter at Biscuit TMFS. If you like the Savage Lovecast, particularly the top of the show, you're going to want to also listen to Blabbermouth, the Stranger's Weekly Politics and Culture and News and Whatever podcast, hosted by Pulitzer Prize winning journalist Eli Sanders. Look for Blabbermouth on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech savvy at risk youth and Nancy. We'll be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.